David Hawkins is editor-in-chief of The Fulcrum, a news outlet focused on reversal of dysfunction in American politics and government. He's also former senior editor of CQ, Congressional Quarterly, and Roll Call. What a lucky thing we have you on our air, David Hawkins, because you're so bright. So let me start with what's going on in my home state, Massachusetts. Now, I don't know that Western Massachusetts should really ever be counted as part of the whole state, because we're very different out here. However, you got Ed Markey, United States Senator, and supported by almost every politician, and a bright Kennedy, a grandchild of Bobby Kennedy, and grandnephew, of course, of JFK. So I guess the question is, did the people of Massachusetts, will they vote for a Markey who has upheld their bluishness, or will they go for yet another Kennedy?
Gosh, I'm going to have to move up and live in the Berkshires for 6 months to figure that out and take you to lunch all the time. For those of us down here in Washington, it seems a bit mysterious, I got to tell you. Ed Markey would seem to be, sort of down the line what Massachusetts Democrats have wanted. It is an interest, and he has been around, of course, forever. I mean, he was. Here's your trivia for the day. He is, in American history, the senator who spent the most time in the House of Representatives before becoming a senator. So he was in the House for 30 years, basically, before going to the Senate. He's been first elected to Congress in 1976, I believe. He votes the way Massachusetts Democrats seem to like. He's had high approval ratings. On the other hand, Joe Kennedy, as you of course just describe, is a Kennedy, got this incredible lineage, is what, half of Ed Markey's age? Is it a generational thing? I don't think it's going to be too much of a substantive thing. Joe Kennedy is not, he's a center left, he's not a blue dog. He's not a fiscally conservative, socially conservative Democrat by any means. He said down the middle, down the line, Democrat who talks about lunch bucket issues and social progressive issues. But I'm not seeing an immediate reason why he thinks this is his moment. It's certainly not going to be a surprise attack like we talked about a couple of days ago when I was talking about AOC managing to render something of a surprise attack on the guy that she beat. This is going to be an incredibly expensive, nationally covered, exhaustively covered thing, and I don't quite understand what the rationale is for Kennedy's candidacy, especially because he has an extremely bright future in the House. He could end up as Speaker someday. Matter of fact, up until now, people had been talking about him as a potential candidate for Speaker of the House when Nancy Pelosi eventually leaves. So why he's in the majority, they're going to be in the majority. I think it's almost a sure bet that the Democrats will hold the majority in the 2020 election. I don't know why he thinks that he would want to give all that up.
I suspect the answer to your very brilliant question is he wants to be president. And you don't get to be president from being Speaker of the House.
It's only happened, it hasn't happened in a long time. It's only happened once before. But yes, that's the play. It's hard to run from the House to be president, even if your name is Kennedy.
And you don't get that many chances. See, this is where so many politicians go wrong, I think, David Hawkins. You don't get that many chances to grab the golden ring. So a lot of people have avoided it when they should have grabbed it on the carousel. And I suspect that's what he's probably thinking right now. How many more chances am I going to have to do this?
I guess that's right, and I think you're totally right that timing is everything in politics. Too many politicians are too cautious. There's a Dick Blumenthal, the senator from Connecticut, had like four chances to be in the Senate or be governor before he finally took it. Only when it was a super safe choice. Too many of them do that; they miss their opportunity. Political dynamics change awfully rapidly, and you need to strike when your moment is happening.
I wouldn't want to let you go, by the way, we still have some time left, but without discussing Kirsten Gillibrand. What was that all about? Do you have any sense of that at all?
What was that? I mean, why did she run or why did it flop?
Yeah, why? Well,
I guess.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll take it in any order you want. Why did she run? Why did it flop? And why did she say, extraordinarily, when it looked like she wasn't going to win, the go beyond 1% in the national polls, that she would accept the vice presidency?
Yeah, a little bit mystified there. I think it's highly unlikely she'd be tapped to be vice president. I do think she has a bright future in the Senate. There's plenty of presidential candidates who have come back to the Senate and had long and distinguished careers.
Sure.
The word on the street down here is that she does not want to do that, that she may want to run for governor, that she may want a position in the cabinet, that she isn't all that happy being in the Senate. I think they all run because, well, they think it's their moment, right, to go back to what we were saying before. And when she first committed to it, she had a plausible case. At this time, being the most overtly feminist, sort of appealing to the sort of the feminist base more so than many other women in the race. There were five, six other women in the race. So many that I don't even know whether it's five or six. That was a plausible strategy. She comes across. She's articulate. I don't know. I mean, why she didn't even make it into the sort of the second round, the top 10, a little bit surprising to me. She's not very popular in the Senate.
She's still suffering
somewhat from the Al Franken, from her decision to take the lead in pushing Al Franken out the door. That has not earned her too many. Earned her some lingering enmity.
And in New York State, you couldn't find a major Democratic politician. I asked Andrew Cuomo about this several times, who would support her.
It was interesting. I mean, she's not all that popular in the New York. I mean, she doesn't. She's sort of been an ideological, sort of squishy. I mean, she started as a centrist and then she became liberal. And I mean, you know, I don't. So again, this is one of those topics where I'm going to now have to move, you know, back to Albany and learn more.
Center right, I would say, rather than centrist, but she was what she was. And then it was either D'Amato or Schumer said, I think it was D'Amato who said, she'll evolve, and evolve she did.
She will evolve. I guess that's what David Paterson thought, too.
I think David Paterson, in appointing her, not that we have to go into ancient history, was listening to people like D'Amato and listening, even though he was a Republican. Paterson, of course, wasn't. And Schumer, who obviously would have liked a woman to be in that spot, also somebody who would not be giving him too tough a time as in terms of his seniority in the position. What do you think?
Exactly right. I think that's exactly right, yeah.
Okay. The question to me is, has she hurt herself with New York voters? She just won a very substantial victory. So she'll be in the Senate for 7 more years. So,
correct. And, the Republican bench in New York is not that strong. I mean, the water cooler conversation down here is that AOC's play in 7 years? Does AOC want to try and keep up her national reputation for 7 more years and then try and run against Gillibrand? Does she want to, one would assume that if Gillibrand is vulnerable after another term in the Senate, it would be from her Democratic left rather than from the Republicans.
So putting on your thinking cap, David Hawkins, which I respect so much, can, in your mind, Donald Trump be beaten in this 2020 election?
Can he be beaten? Sure, he can be beaten. Can he? Yeah, but he can also win. He can easily. I mean, there's lots there. There are almost an equal number of bullet points as to why he can win as to why he would lose. And I think if you had to just pick one bullet point, look to the economic the gross domestic product growth or shrinkage in the second quarter of next year. If it's shrinking, he's out. If it's growing, he can still win.
Okay, very quickly now, we have no time left, but I want to talk to you about gerrymandering. It's such an insidious way of American politics. The courts have said, the Supreme Court has said, we're staying out of this thing. Draw your own districts, draw them any way you want, no matter how filled with self-interest they are. That's the way it's going to be, right?
Maybe, maybe not. Because just interestingly, right before, in recent days, the North Carolina court system has now declared that North Carolina's maps are unconstitutional under the state constitution and thrown them out. So, and this is something that the U.S. Supreme Court essentially told the states. They said, look, we can't find in the U.S. Constitution a way for us to tackle this, but if your state constitution has language in it, have at it. Or if your state legislatures want to reform themselves and get out of the way, have at it. So I think that there are, I think this is something that the public is starting to pay attention to more than they had in the past. The notion that, you know, the summary statement is the voters should pick the politicians, not the politicians shouldn't get to pick their voters. That's a pretty easy soundbite for people to understand. They think it's disgusting, as you said. I think more and more states are going to turn the process over to non-political actors. And I think that what's now happened in both Pennsylvania and North Carolina is going to be tested in some other states. And the courts are going to use provisions in state constitutions to strike down more of these maps. So I think by the time 2021 rolls around and all the maps in the country have to be redrawn after the census, we're going to be close to a tipping point where gerrymandering is going to be less of a problem.
From your mouth to God's ear, David Hawkins, and I so appreciate your being with us. You know, you are incredibly insightful into the way all of this works, and we're very appreciative that you're with us.
I love talking to you.